United States v. Reynolds. Mr. Maksimovich.
May it please the Court, I'm Attorney John Maksimovich, and I'm representing the appellant Tyrone Reynolds in this case. Mr. Reynolds was convicted of kidnapping, conspiracy to possess and distribute marijuana, and a 924C gun count. As a result, he was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 7 years consecutive to the life imprisonment, which is an extremely harsh penalty. In part, the life imprisonment sentence is a result of the court's application of two sentencing enhancements, one of which is a four-level enhancement for playing a leadership role in the offense. In order for the court to apply the four-level leadership enhancement, the court is required and supposed to compare the relative responsibility of all participants. In this case, there were eight participants which formed a mob, and they invaded the home of a drug dealer and robbed him. When the evidence is looked at, the relative responsibility of all the co-participants is virtually the same. It's impossible to say that one is greater than another.
But the court found that Reynolds took charge of the money, the $15,000. He decided what cuts people would get. People actually complained that they didn't get enough. He discovered where Russell's home was located. He decided to rob it. He tied up and beat and questioned Russell and decided the group would go to Chicago the next day. It's hard for me to envision him not being a leader.
Okay. What occurred there, Your Honor, there was a mob of Belizeans that were robbing drug dealers. And they more or less, or in fact, mobbed this man, Russell, as he was entering his house in Gary, Indiana, tore through the house looking for loot, and Mr. Reynolds and his brother found $15,000 hidden in a bathroom. They kept it, just as if any one of the other participants would have found the money, they would have kept it. There was no agreement as to how any loot or money that was discovered during this robbery was going to be divided amongst this mob of criminals. And pursuant to I believe it's commentary note 2 to United States Sentencing Guideline 3B1.1, management over money or assets is not enough to find a leadership enhancement. It may be enough to for the court to grant some form of upward departure or take into consideration in sentencing, but that in and of itself is not enough for that leadership enhancement. It's a four-level enhancement, and it really had a terrible effect on the ultimate sentence that this man received.
So you think that the leader needs to be identified before the action is taken?
I think it
wouldn't emerge during the course of the crime.
I think that he could emerge during the course of the crime, but I do not believe that finding that money and keeping the large part of it with his brother, Mr. Bennett, makes him a leader at all. The other individuals were ripping through that house also looking for things of value to steal. And I'm sure if they found something, they would keep it. There never was an agreement as to how anything that was found.
But you're not disputing that he tied up and beat and questioned Russell and decided the group would go to Chicago the next day in separate cars.
Yes, I am. I am disputing
that.
No, yes and no, Your Honor. I'm disputing that he was the only person that tied up Mr. Russell. Initially, there was testimony that Mr. Reynolds and I believe two other participants tied Mr. Russell up. That's very true. But there, at another point, Mr. Russell was untied and given an opportunity to change his clothes. In all of this, I understand this isn't a pretty picture, but this happened. Somebody else untied Mr. Russell, gave him an opportunity to change his clothes. Somebody else retied Mr. Russell, put Mr. Russell in Mr. Thompson's van, which is what seven of these participants drove Mr. Russell to Chicago from Gary, Indiana, or six of them did. Reynolds did not go in that van with Russell to Chicago. And anyway, as far as getting back to the tying up, what I'm trying to address, while he was in the van, he persuaded the robbers that were in the van with him to allow him to ride his own car to this garage where they were going to get this marijuana. He was untied again, and that wasn't by Mr. Reynolds. That was by another thief. And so, yes, Mr. Russell participated in tying initially, but so did the other participants. And when you're looking at relative responsibility, it's sort of equal or coextensive. I can't see how one can be more responsible than another. And there was no evidence introduced either that this really was, that it was Mr. Reynolds' plan to do this. There was the group met a couple of times, according to Thompson. His testimony was that Mr. Reynolds played a very active role in the discussions as to when and how to rob Mr. Russell and another individual that Mr. Russell was living with, but not that it was his idea. The vehicles that were used to do this were not Mr. Reynolds. The guns that were used to do this were not Mr. Reynolds. There were four guns that were brought by other participants, not Mr. Reynolds. It just really seems to be a stretch to find him to be a leader. There was no one particular participant that Mr. Reynolds had control over. It was a mob-type action where this group of thieves robbed this drug dealer, most likely as they've done in the past, and there was very little planning, if any, and as far as leadership, probably none. Moving on to the ransom issue that I raised, Mr. Russell, around 2 or 3 in the morning, brought it to Reynolds' attention and to, I believe it was Gian Thompson's attention, that he had a quantity of marijuana in Chicago that he could obtain for them. They waited in the morning. As I've already stated, these thieves tied him up, put him in, Gian Thompson's van, I believe, and they drove him to Chicago. But the idea, there wasn't a demand for money in exchange to release him. Nobody threatened to kill him if money or drugs were not, if additional drugs or money were not supplied to him. There was no quid pro quo as far as providing Mr. Russell with his freedom in exchange for something of value. It was a continuation of the robbery, and as in all robberies, the thieves were inquiring of their victim, where's the valuables, in this case the drugs and the money. It's difficult to see a ransom demand when it was Mr. Russell's idea. the whole thing about the marijuana and going to Chicago was Mr. Russell's idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Maksinovich. Mr. Nosek.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm David Nosek, representing the government. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Indiana. I'll take the defense arguments one at a time. First, I'll deal with the leader-organizer issue. U.S. Sentencing Guideline 3B1.1, Comment Note 4, lays out different things, different factors, which this Court should consider. No one is dispositive. What they focus on is exercise of decision-making authority, nature of participation in the commission of the offense, recruitment of accomplices, claim right to a larger share of the fruits of the crime, degree of participation in planning or organizing the offense, and a number of other factors. Judge Williams, I think you, with your first question, really nailed it, which is the district court was right on mark and did not err when he found that the defendant was the leader organizer. First of all, and I think most importantly, why are the vast majority of crimes like this, particularly drug crimes, committed, and it's for money? And the first thing that I would look at in determining leader organizer is who got the largest cut and who decided who got what cut, and that was this defendant. He was making the calls. There was testimony at trial that some of the co-defendants were angry that they got a lesser cut. Some of the gentlemen, and I use the term loosely, only got $650 to $700 for this, which is less than the equal share, which would have been $2,000. The court noted that it was the defendant that discovered the location of the victim's new residence or stash house. He was the one that recruited and contacted other kidnappers. He was the one who decided which night the robbery would occur and then called his associates. He led the interrogation of Russell. Mr. Maksimovich stated that he just happened to be the one who found the money, and whoever found the money would have ended up with the largest cut and kept the most. In all due respect, I think that's factually, in this case, inaccurate. It was the victim who, Mr. Russell, who brought him to the money, who showed him where the drug money was under a sink in a bathroom. He was the one, the defendant, that decided that the group should spend the night at the drug stash house in Gary before leaving for Chicago. He told his co-defendant, Jermaine Gentle, I need you to drive to the city. I think the fact that he's not in the car or the van with the victim is absolutely meaningless. A leader might just as easily say, you guys take him in that van, and I'm going to go in another car and not get caught with him in the van driving back to Chicago. Furthermore, he directed co-defendant Tynan Thompson to take televisions and other stolen goods to his own, the defendant's house, so he gets the most of the booty. I think that what is telling here is that it's not just the victim who says, I think that it was this defendant in charge. It's the victim and the co-defendants. If only the victim had said, I think that the defendant, Reynolds, was in charge, you might be able to make the argument, well, look, he was getting tied up, he was getting beaten, he's under a tremendous amount of stress. He just sort of misread the situation as far as the dynamic between the defendants. But instead, what we have is the victim saying that and all the co-defendants affirming that. Thompson, one of the co-defendants, testified, quote, he's the loudest and pretty much was calling the shots. He had the bag of money. I took he was in charge. When they were arguing about who was going to get what cut, this defendant said this was his move, meaning this was his robbery, and he would get to get the greater share.
Can you move to the whole ransom issue? Because there's really no evidence that shows that Reynolds and his co-defendants made demands to anybody other than Russell or intended for anybody else to pay for his release, which is more typical in a ransom type situation.
Yes, Your Honor, I will address that. And it's an interesting point, but no case has been cited to for the proposition that the ransom demand has to be made to a third party as opposed to the person actually being kidnapped.
Yeah, there's not a lot of law in this ransom.
Correct. And it's sort of it's a more interesting issue, and I'll stipulate that it's sort of a little more nuanced than the first issue, which I think is very clear-cut. As far as the ransom demand goes, like I said, there's no case says that it has to be made to a third party. There's no case that says it has to be they have to use the word ransom or that it has to be money. I think all of us in our head we picture from the movies, like a cutout note with the words on it and the letters, you know, I'm holding you for ransom. This doesn't have to be that.
Well, what was the purpose of the enhancement or the increase in points for there being ransom?
Yes, Judge. The purpose is they quite simply were not going to let him go.
No. In drafting the guideline, what was the commission trying to do? That should tell us something about whether it's applicable here.
Your Honor, to be candid, I have not noted anything as far as the legislative intent or the sentencing guidelines intent, but it's clearly, I believe, a crime where it's driven by money and they're holding the person for ransom maybe has more inherent danger in it, because if the victim side can't come up with the money, there will be tragic results. I think that I see the light on, but what I'd like to cite to is two quotes in the record. We refer to them by page, but I didn't put in the block quotes, but I believe this is the seminal part which cuts to it. I asked the question of a witness, one of the co-defendants, so once he brought you the 50 pounds of marijuana up in Chicago, you were going to let him go? Answer, yes, sir. And I asked, okay, but no one was going to let him go before then, were they? Answer, no, sir. Question, he had to come up with something in order to be freed. Answer, yes, sir. And that was volume 2, page 222. I then asked co-defendant Tynan Thompson on volume 2, page 329, the following questions, and they're talking about when the victim's still tied up and they're about to take him from Gary up to Chicago. Question, does anyone try and let him leave before he brings you more marijuana or more money? Answer from the co-defendant, no, sir. Question, so Zero, that's the defendant's nickname, so Zero told you the plan was to take Boo Boo, the victim's nickname, up to Chicago so he could get more marijuana? Answer, yes, sir. Question, and were you guys going to let him go after he got you more marijuana? Answer, yes, sir. Question, so he's only your hostage until he can get you more marijuana or money? Answer, yes, sir. So it was perfectly clear from both co-defendants, they quite simply were not, this was a drug kidnapping, they were there for money, or a large load of drugs, and they were not going to let him go until he or one of his drug associates came up with more drugs to give him or more money. The facts that came out were that there was just $15,000 in the house, and they had just missed a large load. There was wrappers from pounds and pounds of marijuana, but they got virtually no marijuana, and just these $15,000. And it's clear to everyone, both the co-defendants and the victim, that they were not going to let the victim go until he paid up, gave him something to win his own freedom. Now, the fact that it wasn't a demand made to a third party, I think, is of no import. The fact that it was marijuana and not money, or either one, is of no import. And the fact that they don't mention the word, this is ransom, is of no import. Have I answered your questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nosek. Mr. Nosek, your time had expired, but you may have another minute if you wish.
Very briefly, Your Honor. First, Mr. Nosek refers to the money that was found in the house as the division of the money that was found in the house as a cut or a share. There never was an agreement ever at any point in time that what was found or not found was going to be split or shared by anybody. Cut is not a word to use describing that was found. There never was an agreement that anybody was going to receive any share.
Well, could an agreement have arisen sort of on the ground?
Well, obviously, Your Honor, sure could have, but it didn't. And it, as a matter of fact, that money really wasn't divided. There was some of the participants got a very small amount of it. They complained and complained and complained, and begrudgingly, some of the other participants, not Mr. Reynolds, gave some other participants some money. But there never was an agreement as to how this was going to be split. It's not a pretty situation. But, you know, this is a band of thieves. This probably is not the first time they did it. There's no organization or agreements or understandings between them as to divisions or non-divisions. So you keep what you take, and there's nothing on the record to show anything other than that. As far as the ransom part, there never was any evidence in this record that that they ever contemplated killing Mr. Russell. And conversely, there's no evidence in the record that once they got this marijuana in Chicago, they wouldn't have took him to, say, Milwaukee for another 50 pounds of marijuana.
Well, there's nothing in the ransom requirement that requires there to be a threat to kill.
Correct.
Right.
But they never said, you know, give me the marijuana, we'll release you. That never happened. This was a continuation of a robbery. They crossed state lines, basically at the beck and call of the victim himself. If he wasn't handcuffed as they took him across the state lines, I don't think there would have been a kidnapping. But he was. He wanted to go there. It all turned out right to the victim's plan. He wanted to go there. He wanted to be driving his car. He did go there. He was driving his car. He jumped out of his car. He escaped. But he was handcuffed and restrained as he was taking there. And the way I understand it, that's what made it a kidnapping. But thank you very much.
Thanks, both counsel. Mr. Maximovich, I want to give you the additional thanks on behalf of the court for accepting this appointment.
Thank you very much. All right.